Some claim that the age of a true gentleman is far behind us, but here at 284 Media, obviously we disagree. Now, he may appear in different guises today, but the values and ideals that make him a gent still stand. Gentlemen, aspiring gentlemen, and of course, the queens that hold us down, I'm Ron Grant. Welcome to The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman, a show poised to help guide modern-day men into 21st century distinguished gentlemen. Now, don't worry, it's not always about suits and bow ties, but real-life lessons that translate to grounded, community-minded, well-rounded men. Thank you for taking this journey with me. Education, in my opinion, is the single most important prerequisite for self-advancement. Now, that does not always mean that college is for everyone, because it's not. Let's get that straight. But finding avenues to educate and develop yourself is a huge factor to living your best life as a man. My next guest knows a thing or two about education. He is by far one of the Virgin Islands' best and brightest. He has cemented his legacy by blessing us with manuscripts. He is the interim president of the HLIB Stout Community College and spends his days giving of his best to pour into the future gentleman. And I think he's doing a pretty good job. He's a father, husband, brother, and son. We'll talk education, finding purpose, tattoos, and looking the part with the true 21st century distinguished gentleman, President Dr. Richard Georges. All this and more when we return. Dr. Richard Georges, welcome to The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Let's take a cheers before we begin. 2020, Happy New Year.
Indeed, same to you.
You have been in the classroom for some time.
Yeah.
And now you are the head of our tertiary institution here at the BVI, in the BVI, HLIB Stout Community College. Give me a walkthrough in the day of president of the HLIB Stout Community College. I'm sure no day is the same, but give me an idea of what it's like.
Well, I have a few routines. Okay. After dropping off the kids, you know, I come into the office. First thing to do is usually a cup of coffee and breakfast, usually some sort of sandwich or the like. When I then kind of look over the pressing issues of the day, and what my attention needs to be turned to quickly to get the day started at the institution. So it's usually a bit of housekeeping, organizing myself, and then making sure that certain tasks that the core team in the office is focused on those particular tasks to get done that day.
Okay. As a young man, when you're going through, whether it's high school, college, and preparing yourself a role, did you ever see yourself sitting in the capacity that you are right now?
You know, when I was in high school, I had certain aspirations that didn't align with what I'm doing. I would say it's really when I became a student at the college.
Okay.
Is when I started thinking much more along the lines of where my life was taking me. So I became much more invested in literature and writing and the like, I think largely in part to the level of instruction and advising I received while I was there. And that would have been Dr. Sauda Smith and Dr. Almin O'Neill at the time. That's, I wouldn't tell you how long ago it was. It was
okay.
A couple of decades.
All right.
And change. Because before I got there, I was actually in sciences.
Okay.
Let's just say it wasn't working out for me.
All right.
So when I got to the college, you know, that's when I really started taking what for a long time had been a passion of mine, which was literature, writing, and the arts, and sort of formalizing it into like a, you know, life path. And in 1999, I had the opportunity to actually represent the college at what was then called the Summer Institute for Future Global Leaders.
Okay.
And that was held at UVI. And so it was, I think it was 2 weeks, about a 2 week conference, essentially young people at tertiary institutions throughout the Caribbean and the US, with the ones in the US, I think, had a Caribbean background.
Okay.
You know, so people come from Puerto Rico, from Latin America, the whole Caribbean basin, et cetera. And we were there. That's when we were asked really to start thinking, you know, what were we going to do to make a difference in the region? You know, how did our personal aspirations coincide and align with the needs of the region?
Okay.
And that's when I started thinking, not just of writing, but of contributing in terms of higher education.
Okay.
So I think that moment is when I started really thinking of becoming a lecturer, but not just becoming a lecturer at the college.
Okay.
And then eventually moving into administration and decision making.
Now, we have a lot of young men who are in leadership positions like yourself. What encouragement would you give to them as it pertains to, first of all, the management of people?
Mm.
And how would you help guide them and navigate them through that process of being a leader of whether it's just a small corporation, a small business, or in your case, a very large institution?
Well, I would say it is, you know, I have to lean on some of my own education and leadership.
Okay.
And not business leadership, but actually leadership from a humanities perspective, whereby you look at the entire dynamic of leadership as a humanist, right? I think it's very easy to forget that we are all, you know, cut of the same cloth, I guess you could say, or made of the same stuff, whether that is earth or stardust or
whatever
God
it is.
Whatever it is, we're all made in the same fashion. And I think it sometimes becomes easy, when we lose sight of that, it becomes easy to like vilify people whose values, ethics,
or a bit different,
they don't necessarily coincide with yours. It's easy to vilify people. It's easy to dismiss people. And I think when you start doing that, it becomes tougher to lead them, right? So I think the first thing, if you're in a position of leadership, in my experience, is to look at the individuals in the team. Because leadership doesn't necessarily refer to leading from the front, right? You'll have, if to be an effective leader, you have to take up multiple positions depending on the situation. Sometimes you have to lead from the back, you know? So it's to assess the needs of the individuals with whom you work, their strengths and their weaknesses. And you need to service the needs of those individuals and put them in positions where their strengths can come to the fore, while you either develop their weaknesses or complement them with other individuals who have strengths where they have weaknesses.
Understood.
So I think that's what it's all about. And if someone, you know, doesn't see your way of thinking, it might be that there needs to be a parting of ways ultimately. Mm-hmm. Not because it's necessarily a bad person, but because it might not be a good
fit. Yeah.
You know, so I think outside of, and I don't like to vilify people. Everyone has value. Everyone has worth. Everyone has something to bring to the table. They just might not be at this table.
Right.
You know, I think you need to have that kind of outlook, you know, when you're working with others to try and figure out, you know, what motivates them, what their particular value system is, and how that can align with what the team needs. And then if it doesn't, then you can make another direction. But I think you have to start with looking at the individuals, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and sort of like what drives them.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about balance. You are a husband, father of three, son, brother, sure, a friend to many. How do you balance personal and professional lives? And what encouragement would you give to aspiring gentlemen as it pertains to the balancing? Because I'll tell you why. Too oftentimes, we seem to give too much attention to one thing, whether it's personal or professional. Some tend to throw everything into work and dedicate all their time and energy, and then perhaps the family aspect of it falls back, or it's vice versa. How would you encourage them to balance, or how have you balanced?
Well, the analogy I use, because I've had this question from different arenas, and what the analogy I like to use is, you know, a four burner stove, right? So you can have 20 things that you want to do, but if you only have four burners, you have to prioritize which four things you're going to do. And even if you're doing four things, you know, very few of us can do those four things
at the same time.
Exactly. So that's my rationale. Like you need to be able to distill and to simplify. You know, I am at my core a minimalist when it comes to design and other things. And so despite the fact that I have several things that I like to do, what I have to do, I can't do them all effectively at the same time.
Okay.
So quite frankly, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I was much more socially active than I am now. Because to me right now, family, you know, and the home base is much more important than having a good time every weekend. Every now and then, you need that release. But I don't have the need that I felt I had when I was in my 20s to be going out every weekend and lime and having a good time. Because to me right now, having a good time is sort of like, you know, much more chill than it was when I was much younger. So sort of my priorities have kind of coincided with, I would say, what my lifestyle looks like now. Professionally, you know, writing, speaking, the things that I've been doing outside of my career, per se, my educational career.
Mm-hmm.
So my writing career, that has to be invested in. It requires quite a bit of time, more so than people would see when there's an interview or a book comes out or something. There's quite a lot of time that goes.
It doesn't just happen. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have to kind of balance that sometimes. It's like when the kids go to bed, then you can steal an hour or two working on something, right, et cetera. Or, you know, you find some quiet moments in the day where you think about something, you take notes and that kind of thing. And, you know, that kind of compiles or compounds itself over a period of time into something bigger. In terms of my work in higher education, you know, that's pretty much where the bulk of my day, you know, is expended. So, yes, when you speak about that kind of balance, you know, there's certain metrics or theories you can use. You know, you could think of your day as being segments that you can then break up, you know, where you spend part, in prayer, thanks, and meditation, and you know, and then consolidating your spirit or whatever that means for you, you know, and part in work, you know, which can be any number of things.
Right.
And then another part that you spend in home base with family, with friends, and those kinds of.
But essentially making the most out of your day.
Yeah, for sure, man. I think you have to prioritize. You have to distill it down. You know, you can want to do many things, right, but then what do you have to do? You know, like what gives you breath, you know? So if there's a professional adventure that you want to pursue, but you just kind of want it, then it's probably not something that you must pursue.
Understood.
If it's something that you feel you need to do in order to feel, you know, a part of this world and alive, then that's something you need to expend mm-hmm. some serious energy. Like, you're not going to, you know, when it comes to work and success and achievement, you know, there aren't any miracles. It's all, you know, work and time.
Okay.
So Malcolm Gladwell talks about 10,000 hours into a practice in order to become, you know,
of course, yeah,
good at it. So if you haven't put in the time, you know, then you can't expect to be receiving the reward.
Gentlemen, you heard it here. He's talking about putting in the time and sacrifice in order to see the fruits of your reward and your labor, which is, I think, is very important, because too often we kind of want to skip the process. We want to kind of jump ahead and
well, I think partly because we live in a society where we often see the end result, you know, so you see, you know, whatever that end result is, whether it's material possessions, whether it is accolades, whether it is someone arriving at a particular stature in their life.
Of course.
But you don't see what they have to do
the process
to get to that position.
Exactly.
So you might be looking at someone with a material possession and coveting that possession without realizing that possession is a symptom or a reward for, you know, work.
Indeed.
Yeah.
What has fatherhood taught you as a man? And how has that changed the trajectory of your life? And perhaps not only fatherhood, but a husband being a provider for your family.
Father, I mean, being in a committed, serious relationship and in fatherhood, I think should teach you that, you know, you aren't the most important person. You know, that the world no longer revolves around you. I think that is probably, but at the same time, it kind of gives you a different level of vigor
mm-hmm.
and seriousness to greet the kind of things I was talking about before.
Right.
You know, because if you have people depending upon you now, you know, that investment in yourself to, you know, achieve a greater goal, you know, or whatever your aspiration is, becomes even more resolute,
yeah,
because now you have people who are depending on you to get it done. You know, so now that there's less time to waste. So I think for me, that's what, you know, both being a husband and a father meant for me. It's like, it was time for me now to grow up,
get it right,
serious, yeah, and start handling business.
What advice would you give to fathers and husbands out there as it pertains to, because there becomes a point when we talking earlier about balance, becoming overwhelmed at any point.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the one piece of advice you could give to them as it pertains to being the best husband or father?
Something that I think, you know, I have to work on all the time. Something okay. I think everyone in any kind of relationship has to work on, that's communication, you know, and it's not, I don't think it gets perfect,
mm-hmm.
but something that you have to be willing to constantly work on improving to ensure that that everyone understands each other, you know, because you're talking about a partnership, you're talking about little people who depend on yep. this partnership, whether that's within the confines of a marriage or co-parenting, whatever it is, there has to be some level of understanding in terms of roles and responsibilities so that when somebody else, someone has professional commitments, you know, that interfere with or coincide with or mean that the other person now has to pick up the slack. And
teamwork.
Exactly. So I think that is key and important. Even before we start talking about kids, it's just in any kind of relationship.
Most definitely. You know,
people need to be on the same page.
Sweet. Dropping a lot of nuggets here. You're watching The Art of a Distinguished Gentleman. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. With me today is Dr. Richard Georges, and we're having a very interesting conversation as it pertains to not only finding purpose, but balancing both personal and professional life. Dr. Georges, you and I have something in common, and I think a lot of persons in the community have this in common. You have a lot of artwork on your skin. Tell me about your artwork, and I'm going to get to some questions, but just tell me about your tattoos and what they mean to you and how you came about selecting that type of expression.
Well, I think, I have a few pieces. I think they're pretty personal.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I first started getting them, they weren't as widely accepted.
Right.
You know,
more popular.
Right. I used to get accosted, you know, mm-hmm. in the bank, in the supermarket, and like, what do you do to this?
The day itself.
yeah, exactly. But I think it's been a while since I got the first, and it's been a while since I got the last.
Okay.
So I have sleeves and a couple of other pieces. And so they tend to be thematic. So I have several images and icons on one arm that pertain to wisdom. You know, so they're like pyramids. There are other icons and images that refer to, how to say, different cultural manifestations of wisdom, right? That have some relevance to my family
okay.
background. So I have some Indian heritage. So therefore, there's like their Indian images which speak to wisdom. Quite a bit of African heritage.
Okay.
So there are African elements that speak to the same concept. And then there's some more contemporary images that speak to morals and motifs that also revolve around wisdom. And then the other, likewise, for beauty and mm-hmm. for understanding. And then there's another piece somewhere that speaks to truth and those kinds of things.
What do you want young men to understand about, first of all, tattoos in general?
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, professionally, what advice would you give to them in regards to how they choose to, you know,
so I think
tell their story?
It depends. I would say first and foremost is make sure that it's something that you love. You shouldn't get something on a whim or a fancy.
Of course.
For sure. Make sure that's something that has, you know, for me, it needs to have deep personal meaning. For me, usually some sort of spiritual meaning. But I wouldn't say that has to be the same for everyone. You know, you can just love something just because of its aesthetic or
right.
artistic value, but you should love it. It shouldn't be something that should go out of fashion, that you're going to
regret
back with regrets, you know, or that you're going to have to invest in, you know, laser removal mm-hmm. or something. You know, you don't want to get it to that point. So with that in mind, that is something that's going to be on you for life. You know, you shouldn't skimp, you know, so if you can't afford to get good work done, get no work done.
Absolutely. That's good advice.
You know, so that's what I would say. Yeah, that's the best advice I can give you. So, you know, if you have you should be doing tons of research before. I've never been a believer in showing up and then
just getting it out automatically.
Or getting it out of the book, you know. Should always be custom, you know, because you don't have matching tattoos. If you didn't mean to have matching tattoos. Should always be custom, and that has a cost consideration. You should always research the artist so you know the person's style. You know, being black people, being darker skinned.
Of course.
Not everyone knows how to work with darker skin.
Yeah.
You know, so you should definitely do your research because, you know, if you go to the wrong person, you might end up with them with scars, and you don't want to do that. Then not all tattoo artists understand not just how to tattoo darker skin, but even how to get color into darker skin.
Right.
You know, so the different techniques. So you got to make sure that your artist has worked with black people before. You know, I think that's a wise move. There's a myth mm-hmm. in some tattoo circles that, you know, darker skins can't take color, which is false.
Right.
You know, I have color in my sleeves. So you just got to make sure you do the research, both on the image that you were hoping to get and the artist, okay. quality of the artist. And then if it is that you have to save up for a year or two to get it.
To get it right.
It's better to do that than to rush and get the wrong person or the wrong thing. So that's the first advice I'll give in terms of the personal aspect of it. Professionally, it depends on what your career is. You know, so if you are, you know, going to have to be suited and booted, as they say, you know, then you want to probably, like I do, keep the wrists
right
and the hands bare, the neck bare, close the face bare. But, you know, for other professionals, that's not
as different. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, depending on the profession, neck tattoos and hand tattoos are fine. I think for my profession, I don't think it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. So as such, you know, I don't even entertain, you know.
The idea.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, I'm not, you know, that interested, you know, in getting new tattoos because I've gotten sort of what I felt I wanted, okay. what I felt I needed.
With that said, it's not a case where, because many persons say, oh, you get one, you have to get more. It's like addiction for you.
I think there is an element of that.
Okay.
You know? I think there is an element of that. I think, especially if you get a really good one and mm-hmm. love how it looks.
You want to go back and get another one.
You're really happy with it. And you know, your mind starts going the other way. But I think with me, going back to the early part of the conversation, it's just not a priority.
Okay.
You know, I have multiple other things that are more important than the next tattoo. You know, it's not saying I'll never get it, mm-hmm. you know, but it's not a priority for me.
Okay. Definitely. I thank you for that advice and I appreciate it very much because like ourselves, persons would never see. Most times for my tattoos, because I choose the arena. Most times I'm with a shirt and tie or long sleeve shirt. So I think persons really, gentlemen up there need to really understand that inking your skin is quite a significant deal, but it has to be done with a lot of care and consideration, like you were speaking about earlier, and understanding your professional setting, whether or not it's appropriate, but really allowing yourselves to tell a story. And the truth is, tattoos are really, or I think they should be for the individual. Mm-hmm. It's not always a case where you feel like you want to showcase it and put it on parade. But when the time comes that persons do get to see it, it should speak about you as an individual. And it should not interfere, I don't think, with the professional aspect.
I think we're in the topic of presentation.
Yes, self-presentation is very important.
And I think aside from tattoos, I think it's important.
And the same thing could be said about earrings.
Oh, yeah. All of the above. I think even, you know, how you present yourself is, you know, extremely important. So while, you know, the old saying goes, don't judge a book by its cover, but quite frankly, people do. Mm-hmm. And it could have a negative impact on your professional, you know, how people receive you professionally.
Do you feel as though persons in our community, young men, feel as though they have to fit a certain dress code as it pertains to fitting into key positions professionally? Do you think there's somewhat of a misconception there?
I'm not sure I would agree. I think that depending on your domain, mm-hmm. I think there are ways to present yourself professionally. You know, so for example, not because you're in construction doesn't mean that you can't present yourself, you know, very professionally. Right. I think there are individuals who do that, you know, who are in a particular, have a particular reputation for being, you know, not dressed down per se, but sometimes, you know, maybe scruffy.
Yeah.
But then when you see certain leaders of these industries, they present themselves, they're very smart.
Well put together.
You know, so not to say they're going to wear a suit and tie, mm-hmm. you know, but in terms of the quality of the fabrics, how they present themselves in terms of, you know, that they're well put together and well presented. I think that is much more important than we realize, especially for younger people. Mm-hmm. You know, I think older people who have already established themselves, you know, is not, especially in a smaller community, don't necessarily have to have the same kind of focus on presentation because they already have the gravitas of
but young men who are like, trying to come up, you don't have that
exactly.
luxury.
You're trying to establish yourself.
Correct.
So therefore you need to present yourself in a way that is memorable. and memorable in a positive fashion.
Absolutely. As we close out, I want you to give the general public your idea and your depiction, because I do feel as though you fit the 21st century distinguished gentleman very well. What is your idea of a gentleman when you think about it in every sense of the word?
Well, you know, we start off with, I think there has to be some kind of introspection in terms of, I'm not sure how you'd want to define, you know, gentleman. But I think in terms of, I'll just speak about, I guess, manhood, I guess, and how we think of ourselves is where it starts, right? So there has to be some degree of introspection that is devoid or divorced from social, cultural expectations, right? So there has to be something within you centering yourself in terms of what maketh the man, you know, and what your responsibilities as a man are, and who those responsibilities or obligations are to. So there usually would be some, you need to have some, I guess, real, you know, deep understanding of yourself.
Self-awareness.
Yes. What your weaknesses are, what your strengths are, what your vices are, and how you deal with them. I think you need to understand your most important relationships. And what you're doing to nurture those.
Nice.
Which relationships are not as important, you know, and how to consider, how to prioritize those connections. I think that's the first thing you do. The first thing that you should be doing. Mm-hmm. I think all of us need to have a clear sense of direction. It doesn't always come right away. You know, we don't always know what it is that we want to do or that we need to be doing. I would say that, you know, the safest bet usually is relying on your God-given talents. And those are trying to tell you what your calling is and what it is you are required to do on this earth while you are here.
Very good.
Yes. Right? So that's the second thing. The third thing I would say then is that work ethic. You know, so, I mean, all forefathers demonstrated that with their hands.
Yeah.
You know, manifested that physically, you know, and you can see the fruits of their labor when it grew, or they reared it, or they built it. So you have to have a particular work ethic. You have to be ready to sacrifice and invest the kind of time required to get to where you need to be.
Indeed.
And then lastly, I think the last manifestation that would be in your, how you present yourself and how you interact with others, regardless of their state.
That would make the whole gentleman.
Yes. I think so.
Absolutely. Dr. Georges, thank you so much for stopping by our studios and dropping the little nuggets for our aspiring gentlemen. We appreciate you and congratulations.
Thank you very much.